Hi everyone, and welcome to this week's episode of Memcast. I'm your host, Dr. Rachel Saville, and this week I've got the pleasure of welcoming Dr. Aklak Chowdhury to the show, who's going to be talking to us about quality improvement. Now, Dr. Chowdhury is one of our respiratory consultants and Deputy Medical Director for Quality and Safety at the University Hospitals of Derby and Burton. Hi, and welcome to Memcast, Dr. Chowdhury.
Hi, Rachel. Really great to be here. I've seen a few of your Memcasts already, so I'm happy to join the crew.
So prior to us meeting, I was looking at the updated outcomes and guidance document from the JRCPTB, so the Joint Royal College of Physicians Training Board. And from September this year, 2023, all IMT year twos will be expected to have completed a quality improvement QI project and get a QIP assessment tool or equivalent by the end of IMT year two. So I thought this would be a good opportunity for us to talk about quality improvement, what it means and how people can get involved to successfully achieve this curriculum requirement by the end of their second year as IMT. So we're going to split the quality improvement topic over two podcasts because it's got quite a lot of information. And we're going to start in this episode to talk about the difference between quality improvement and audit, and how to begin, who you should get involved with your quality improvement project. Next time, we'll be talking about PDSA cycles and the stages in quality improvement project. So could you start, Dr. Chowdhury, by letting us know what is that difference between quality improvement and audit?
That's absolutely fine, Rachel. So I think this is a question that gets asked quite a lot of times, and it's not just by trainee doctors. Does require a slight bit of explaining. So let's start with quality improvement. So quality improvement is an umbrella term, and it really encompasses all things that improve quality, of which clinical audit is under the umbrella. Now, what does that actually mean? Well, what is audit? It's a tool for benchmarking against a known standard. So it's looking at compliance and assurance. So this could be benchmarking against a NICE guidance standard. It could be a specialty guidance standard or something that's a bit more local. But what it's really trying to do is test compliance against these standards. And then once you've done the audit, it will reveal gaps between practice and the standards, and then some key actions that you'll take forward. Now, these will recommend some certain changes to happen. So after you've collected the data, you will compare against the standard and you say, right, this and this may need improvement. And therefore, you then need to implement change. And in that part, the implement change part, is where you will start using quality improvement tools. And I think this is really important because if good old-fashioned audit, not what we're doing now, so sometimes we do rapid cycle audits nowadays, but previously, what did we used to do? We used to do a baseline audit, find the key actions. We used to do one implementation of change and then re-audit again. But who's to say that single item of change has been thought through? And why is it that idea that's worked and not something else? How do you know that if you collected the same data 2 or 3 weeks later, that data may vary? So I think there are some useful aspects of audit, and definitely for identifying problems, audit is very, very useful. Quality improvement is a much wider, shall we say, remit in terms of methods, tools, and processes to improve care. Now, what does care mean and what do I mean by that term? Well, you probably need to go back to quality. Okay, what does quality mean in healthcare? Now, there are a number of definitions for that, but I quite like STEEP, ST with three E's in it with a P at the end. And the S here stands for safe care, timeliness, effective care. So, you know, is it based on the latest NICE guidance? Is it based on what's on the Cochrane databases? Are you doing the correct care for that patient in that condition? Is it efficient? So are you using your resources wisely? Is it timely? Making sure that you're using your human resources wisely as well. And equitable. Now, equitable, as I think, is probably the most challenging part of what quality means. It basically means that if I deliver the same care, let's say the sepsis 6, in a different organization at a different time of the day with a different team, will they still get the sepsis 6 as the same as my trust? So that's what I mean, equitable care. And if you imagine, say, something as simple as VTE completion between two wards, even in the same department next to each other, you will see variation. So how good are we at reproducing equitable care? And finally, and perhaps the most important one, unfortunately, doesn't make the acronyms, you know, make a word. And that's why patient-centered is at the end of this acronym. But it is for our patients. So if we don't involve our patients in what the quality is and not capture their patient experience, then we're not going to get a true picture of what we mean by quality. So that's quality. So what's quality improvement? Well, quality improvement is precisely improving all six of those domains. Okay, you don't have to do all six, but you can pick on safe care, for example, improving a WHO checklist, being effective, introducing a NICE guideline. So quality improvement has two specific aspects to it. There's the people component of the definition of quality improvement, and it's about giving the people closest to the issues affecting care the time, permissions, and skills and resources to do them. There's no point in me doing, inverted commas, a quality improvement in a department by myself and my senior team, because actually I don't understand the problems or the issues and I'm not involved in that team, and they will have a much better idea. If they know the problems, they're in a far better position to work out what the solutions are. The challenge that I have, and many leaders do, is making sure that it isn't felt like it's done to and it's done with. And in fact, even better, that team tells us these are the problems. And you know what? We're going to try and fix them through improvement work. And it's a multidisciplinary approach. So that's the first part, is the people component, you know, because that's who's going to be doing the improvement work. The second part is all about the methods. So everyone gets really het up about the methods. You know, you see these fish bones here and driver diagrams there, and you think, yeah, I need a bit of that to do quality improvement. Actually, you need very little of that. It's not so much about the tools. It's more about using the right methods at the right time. And there I've seen great improvement work with very few applied tools in that process. That's not to say you don't need them, but it's just a case, don't get carried away with it. So it involves a systemic and coordinated approach to solving a problem using specific methods and tools with the aim of bringing about measurable improvement. And that's the other key aspect of the definition. If you don't measure, you can't say you've improved. And a lot of the things that we often do is that, well, I think it's better. Our patients seem to be smiling more. Anecdotal stuff doesn't count. You've got to really start measuring, because if you don't measure and you haven't measured before you started improving, you will never know where you've got to. So if I had to summarize what the role of audit is that you do the audit, you identify the problem, you use quality improvement to improve, and then you re-audit. So if you are doing an audit and you've identified it, quality improvement methodology is a more sound way of making sure that those changes are implemented and sustained. What I would say the big difference is about understanding the problem. And sometimes in audit, there isn't the opportunity to understand the problem, but quality improvement allows you to have the time and the methodology to do that as well.
Thanks. And you mentioned there that importance of teamwork and to make sure that you get buy-in from other people on your ward or work area. I guess that feeds into where we should begin, who we need to get involved in the quality improvement projects. I mean, trainees shouldn't really be trying to take all this on their own.
Absolutely right, Rachel. And I think it's one of the things that sometimes has happened, especially in, shall we say, doctor-led projects. It's interesting to find out that most quality improvement projects led by doctors do not sustain. Over 72% fail to actually have any impact on patient care. Part of the reason for that is that quality improvement is a team sport. It kind of makes sense, doesn't it? Because looking after patients is a multidisciplinary team sport. So why would you suddenly move from there to doing a quality improvement with a group of doctors, or even worse, by yourself? So it absolutely needs a team approach to improve. It's interesting that the Medical Royal Colleges have come up with a document that only just published in May 2023 that talks about the role of quality improvement. What they've said is that it's really important that you have active participation of the program of work, but you don't need to lead it, which is at the moment a bit of a challenge because our ARCP is saying something slightly different. But I think over time that change will happen. What I would then go and say is that, right, okay, I need a team. Who are they? So one thing I would say is a major pitfall is don't pick your mates, okay? Because that's not necessarily who you need for your program of work. It's the easiest and you feel more comfortable with your friends and so forth, and they may be happening to work on your same ward, but don't just pick the people that you already got relationships with. Sometimes you have to sit down, really purposefully and work out who your potential stakeholders might be. And I think for me, that takes a bit of time. You may have heard of something called a stakeholder map. If not, just Google it. Essentially, it's four boxes. And on the y-axis, you have power, from low power to high power. And on the x-axis, you have the interest, from low interest to high interest. Now, ideally, you want somebody in your program of work. So let's just say, for example, improving the rate of medical discharges before midday on your cardiology ward. And you've got to think, right, who's going to be really helpful to have as high power and high interest? So you may say, right, one of my senior sisters on the ward may be a good person to have because they're always telling me about, are there any discharges today? And I know they've got high power and they're desperately interested to get this better. So what a great idea to have that person on the team, as an example. Not everyone will be interested in your program of work and not everyone will have a power to influence it. But I think if you can really identify the people that will make the difference in your program of work, then it'd be great. And I would say that team should be as multidisciplinary as possible. If you can get some feedback from patients or if you get a patient in the group as well, that would also be really helpful as well. And they would be interested. They may not have any power necessarily to change things in your organization. That's what your team is for. But they will definitely be interested to make sure that things happen and there'd be a great ad program of work as well. I hope that answers that question. Is there any sort of further thoughts about that?
Well, I was just wondering about mentorship and supervisors. So there might be some projects in your area already set up and just need someone to take over for your academic year. Or your supervisors might have a new project that they're keen to start, or trainees themselves might come up with new ideas. But it's really useful to have someone around that's got a bit more experience in quality improvement to help mentor you through this process, especially if you haven't done a lot of QI work before.
Yeah. So I think it's really essential, this. If you take the experience of an IMT or a foundation year doctor, they're there for 4 to 6 months at a time. You're coming into a department where you're kind of doing two things here. You're trying to learn about the specific clinical aspects of care, whatever specialty it is, but also you're trying to get an improvement program or join an improvement program. So you're in the first 2 weeks of that and you're thinking, do I really know what the problems in this department are? Probably not. So what you would then need to do is try to see if you can get yourself, you know, talk to your clinical education supervisor, but also specifically find out who the audit lead or the quality lead is for your department and say, look, is there anything that's going that will help me? And if there is, you've automatically got yourself a sponsor because somebody wants to get this work done. So you don't need to chase a program or a project. You know, why not go for something that's already happening? That doesn't mean to say that you can't develop your own program of work, but just be aware you're new to that area. It takes weeks, months, sometimes years to identify the real nuances of what the problems are. So it's a far more challenging situation. So a sponsor is someone I would say has an inherent role in the department, is potentially a clinical lead, a consultant, it may be a senior sister, maybe a lead pharmacist that works in the department. That is slightly different to what a mentor is. So what is a mentor? Well, you could have a mentor in your entire training program that looks at your career progress. But specifically when it comes to mentorship within quality improvement, this is somebody who is going to help you and coach you to get to the various stages of an improvement program itself. So they don't need to have any inherent knowledge of that department, but they do have a deep knowledge of how to improve and how they can support you and break down those barriers. Now, ideally, it'd be nice to have that same person rolled into one in a nice little package. I kind of fit into that category myself sometimes, but other times I just do the mentorship role when it's another department. And I like to be curious. It's good for me to not know because it allows me to ask questions that perhaps if you were in the department, it'd be harder to ask. So mentorship is different to sponsorship. If you can't find it within your department, then look and see what's available in the organization as a whole. Almost all organizations will have a strategy and improvement department, or the medical director's office may support you. And if you still got a gap, then you do need to go to your education supervisor and get some. You need to put yourself in the sense of being a trainee, not just in the medical specialty, but a trainee as an improvement. And just as you would do, if you're going to learn a procedure, you also need mentorship in how to do plan, do, study, act. Not just workshops, not just blogs like this one, but actually somebody who will go through that process with you and say, look, how did this all go? Did you think we did the right thing? And so forth.
Brilliant. Thank you so much, Dr. Chowdhury. I think we're going to leave it there for today. And next time we'll come back and we'll talk about PDSA cycles and the stages of quality improvement and where people can get a bit more information from. So thank you so much for today, Dr. Chowdhury. And thanks to everybody for listening to us. We'll see you all again next week on Memcast.